Hi, this is Sal Nicosia from the Haunted Shanley Hotel in Napanoc. You are listening to Spirit Radio with Willie Hassel and Lynn Nickerson on WSCA 106.1 FM.
Please note that the views expressed on this program are those of the individuals who speak them, and not necessarily those of Portsmouth Community Radio, its Board of Trustees, members, volunteers, or underwriters. Good evening and welcome to Spirit Radio. I am your host, Willie Hassel. Along with my co-host, Lynn Nickerson, we will take you on a journey into the unknown, where the paranormal becomes the normal, a journey to a world cloaked in darkness, where reality becomes a thin veil. So sit back, relax, and join us as we venture into the shadows, the darkness, the unknown, and back. And good evening once again, and welcome to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience on WSCA 106.1 FM. I am your host, Willie Hassel, your gatekeeper to the dark side, your guide to the realm of the unknown, the unseen, the unthinkable. And as always, she is the lovely, she is the mystical, she is the mysterious, she's smiling. Here's Lynn Nickerson. Good evening, Lynn.
Good evening, Willie. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I'm cold.
Yeah, I bet you our guests in Hawaii are feeling a whole lot better than we are.
Oh, I bet they are. What I'd do to trade places with them right now.
I know. We're experiencing bitter cold here.
9 degrees this morning, I think it was. Yeah. Don't like it. Okay, so on tonight's show, we are going to welcome Janet Lesson and her husband, Sasha Alex Lesson, Ph.D. And Janet is the host of a radio show on Aquarian Radio. And along with her husband, Dr. Lesson, they research and report on ancient aliens, extraterrestrials, interdimensional beings, UFOs, the abduction contacting experiencer phenomenon, and so much more. And they are currently focused on writing a series of books, Anunnaki Gods No More. The latest in the series, Anunnaki Legacy of the Gods, was published in January of 2014. And so please, let's welcome now to Spirit Radio, Janet and Sasha Lesson. Good evening. How are you?
Good evening.
Hi.
Aloha.
We stay here in Hawaii. We're on the island of Maui, and I'm sorry that you're freezing.
How warm. How warm is it there?
There are warmth.
Oh, we can take it. Go ahead.
Okay, we'll send you some.
Okay.
Sasha, are you there?
Yes. Welcome.
Good evening. Good evening, Sasha.
Good evening. So just how warm is it?
So I'm having trouble hearing this thing.
I'm having a little trouble hearing, too. I'm not sure what's going on, but we'll just have to do our best.
There is probably a bit of a delay, but can you hear us okay?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Would you like us again, do you have questions or do you want...
Well, what I was going to do is I was going to give, just do a little recap for the audience, since everybody hasn't read your books and not everyone is familiar with the Anunnaki. So, as Willie mentioned, we're going to be discussing the Anunnaki connection with Earthlings. And for the benefit of our listeners, I'm going to give this brief history so that everyone has a point of reference. So, most of this research, or much of it, that has been done by Dr. Sasha Lesson and Janet Lesson is based on translations from Sumerian clay tablets, and this was performed by Zachariah Sitchin, who was the foremost authority on the Sumerian language. And sadly, he died recently in 2010, but what he discovered from the tablets was that approximately 400,000 years ago, a scientist by the name of Enki, along with a crew of seven individuals who were 12 feet tall, and they were Homo sapiens from the planet of Nibiru, they came to Earth in search of gold to make white powder to shield their planet's atmosphere. Now, the ancient Sumerians called these people the Nibiru, from Nibiru, the Anunnaki, which means those who came from the sky. And the Anunnaki hybridized their genes with the genes of a local human species, which they chose the Homo erectus, to create what resulted in us to labor in the gold mines primarily in Africa, placing this new race of slaves under military rule by a line of hybrids that still to this day control our planet. So we still have this master-slave paradigm that was set up then and is still now in effect. And our discussion tonight will hopefully touch on how this all came about and what humanity still faces under the oppression of the Anunnaki. So, would you like to take it from there?
Okay, Dr. Lesson, take it away.
That's a nice summary.
Thank you.
Basically, these people came to get gold. They needed it to shield their atmosphere, which was being lost. And they adapted their genes to Earth using a few genes of a local intelligent hominoid that was already here. Homo erectus, the ancestor of Neanderthal and Bigfoot, who's still around. But in any case, they made people that worked in the mines, and then they made another even closer genetically to them. They kept reproducing with the pretty girls, and people had, and they had slavery, and they these people that we were, our ancestors, had the model of these people from Nibiru who were just big people with like us, with high technology, and they weren't gods at all. And our ancestors got to figuring it out, and that they can even be killed. And so partly was they decided they were going to keep us apart and divided against each other so that we wouldn't realize that we were being ruled by a few of them. And during the flood, which they knew were coming, their commander said, let them all drown. We're not supposed to have this engineered species anyhow. It's against the rules. Planetary colonization, let them all drown. And the head geneticist and his friend said, no way. And as much as they could, they saved people from the flood. And we get a lot of stories in every land about that.
Mm-hmm.
And in the recovery period, there was a period where everything was really building life back on the planet. They had a new thermonuclear war, when one faction was closing in on their spaceport in Sinai, and the other faction nuked them, but then the fallout from the nuclear bombing blew over the bomber's place in Iraq, Sumer. And so that's the sort of the background. These people were a military dictatorship. They fought among themselves. They killed each other. They killed their relatives. It's just like the royalty of all our royalties everywhere. And they've just left this terrible model. But the geneticists that created us were sick of this stuff on their planet. And so what they did was they deliberately created compassionate people. They educated this line of people that's us siblings to do better than them, because they could see that we had we could empathize, that we could reach spiritual levels that their society, the Nibirans, the Anunnaki, hadn't reached. And so most of them went off the planet, and now some of them have returned December 21st, 2012 or so, to try to reassert the celebration of our evolution. And to do that, they have to bring about an end to wars and thermonuclear arming and polluting the planet. There's a lot of things to be done, but we think that things have drastically changed. Yeah, you take it from there.
All right. Well, the Anunnaki were from Nibiru, and they were very extremely long-lived. We think that Enki, the main characters are Enki, who is the one who loved humanity and saved us from the flood. His brother Enlil, he was known as the commander of Earth, and he was the next in line to the throne of Nibiru. His father was Anu. Anu was the father of Enki, Enlil, and his daughter Nenma. Enki and Nenma were geneticists, along with Enki's son Nigashida, who was later known as Thoth.
Mm-hmm.
And so they came here to basically save their own asses, so to speak, because their planet was losing its atmosphere. The Nibirans were starting to lose the ability to reproduce. Their population had been greatly reduced by wars, and then their planet stopped producing volcanic activity sufficient to maintain its atmosphere, and they started getting holes in the ozone.
Janet, if I could ask you a question right there. Since they were so advanced, why do you suppose they couldn't resort to alchemy to come up with enough gold?
Okay, so there are alchemical processes that they're learning, on a learning curve like we are. They came here 450,000 years ago. And their propulsion systems were probably
different,
ancient at that time, and so they were learning it going. So they didn't have the answers at first, but they processed the gold, and they knew there was plenty of gold in the inner solar system. They had stories about the solar system. They appeared to be a part of a intergalactic organization because they had rules of interplanetary conduct, which they defied by producing human beings. We were an illegal species. You're not allowed to create any species as to be used as a slave. But they were in a dilemma. Either they created us or perish. You know, they weren't able to do it alone. But we wouldn't exist if they didn't create us. So, you know, while it was illegal, but at the end of the day, we needed each other.
Yeah, catch 22.
And so the ruling factions of today are the descendants. Well, we're all descendants of the Anunnaki, but they have a specific bloodline which they created as a kingship. And the original intention was to, you know, guide us. They weren't supposed to be like these dictators-type systems of kingship. But like all systems, they kind of get co-opted and go awry. Part of it was...
It was because of Enlil?
...factions between the two brothers, and they are the devil and God in the Bible, but that's really a warping of the story of the Anunnaki. And that's why you have the conflicting depictions of God. You know, there's a mean God that, you know, is killing everybody, and there's a kind God, Adonai and Yahweh, are the two variations on God. And the reason why they're so different from one another is that they are two different beings.
Yeah, and there's a difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament. The loving God is in the New Testament. So I think the angry God is of the Old Testament, and I think it's basically the Anunnaki, Elohim and Nephilim.
They're all Anunnaki. The angry God is Yahweh, is the brother Enlil of Enki, who is the New Testament God, more than likely. Although, they're, you know, it's kind of like a title, and it gets changed by whoever's ruling at the top. So we're looking at that. We're not 100% sure that that's how it separates. separates, but, you know, Yahweh may be a title, and the and the sun ruled for a while, and of course, Marduk is the son of Enki, and, you know, Marduk went a little bit crazy, and we think that might be because some of the influences of this planet and his genetics. He's a little bit slightly different genetics than the Enki and Nima and Enlil, whose father was Anu.
Well, yeah, I do. I've got a lot of questions about the species and the races, but what intrigues me is several million years before the Anunnaki got here, a race by the name, or what is referred to as the Terraformers, came here and planted hominids. And you had mentioned that 80% of our DNA is off-planet, but that we are still considered indigenous humanoids. If we were indigenous, which race do you think was indigenous to the planet? Not Homo erectus, is it?
I don't think any of us are indigenous.
I don't either.
But this planet was terraformed someone or some beings. It was systematically, there's this discontinuous record in history.
Right.
Because the evolution didn't go gradually from something to something else.
And it wasn't direct either.
Microevolution is true, yeah, adapting to local conditions over millions of years, but macroevolution was false. It was just this jump. Suddenly, there it is. These full-on intelligent human beings. When Adapa, this kid, was born, the geneticist made the king of Nibiru, and everybody said, "Oh my gosh, this person is just as smart as our kids. Millions of them. There's only a few thousand of us. We can't let them organize against us." In the meantime, Enki's son Marduk was organizing them against. He wanted his throne because he had been promised the throne, and they have a really complex history. This one king, his name was Lama on Nibiru, wasn't doing anything, and the atmosphere was going, and nothing was done. So this one prince named Alalu led a rebellion and pushed Lama off a tower and killed him and so forth. And said, "Now I'm the king." And then Anu came forth and said, "Hey, what do you mean? I'm supposed to be the successor. If this guy's dead, it's me." And so the prince that killed the other king said, "Look, I'll marry my daughter to your son, and your kid will rule Nibiru after me. Is that a deal?" "Deal." Okay, so that's the kid, my duke, who's making all the trouble and getting allied with us Earthlings against the Anunnaki, against Enlil, and that's why he nuked him. But then the cloud ruined his trip, too.
Okay, well, let me ask you something else. There's an issue for me with the size and the longevity. The Anunnaki were supposed to be up to 12 feet tall, and yet their descendants seem to be much shorter and shorter-lived. So what happened there? Did they turn off certain genes to...
They genetically altered us, because if we lived as long as they did, we'd be, you know, smarter than they and figured out and overthrow them. So they did monkey with our DNA. And
I think they did. But
the hybridization process probably shortened us, although, you know, I've been studying... I study YouTube at night, and I focus on genetics, and there are human beings that... there's a couple that are alive now that are close to 8 feet tall. So we have this giantism potential within each of us. And
as in a recessive gene?
It's on and off.
There was also some kind of an effect that the Anunnaki noted on their own children. Each successive generation got matured like twice as fast. You know, it's like their life was going by way faster when they were born on Earth. Like Inanna was getting really old. Instead of just being a crawling baby, suddenly she was this full-grown woman. And that's what they noticed on themselves, too, that everything was sped up on Earth.
Right, some kind of influence of our environment on all those factors.
Mm.
They were aging here. The Anunnaki, Enki, Enlil, and Nima were aging here. But then Anu came back, and he said, "Oh my goodness, look at you kids! You look ancient, and looked like he, you know, was in his 20s." So they had some remedies, and that's what Wanatok Gold is. But apparently, there's a plant as well, because Noah was given a plant. Noah and his wife were given the plant after they survived the flood. They were given a place to live, and so they were given immortality as well.
So you say they were given immortality. So was that a genetic thing that they could control?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Then at what point did they decide that our makers wanted to make us surpass them?
We have the technology to do it. I don't know if we have it will, but we do have the technology.
Right.
But did they really want us to have smarts like they do? Because they were building a slave race. So at what point did they decide they wanted us to be intelligent?
I tell you, hearing what you said, there's something wrong with my connection. Did you catch what you
said? No, they wanted us to be smart enough to follow their orders.
Okay.
But not smart enough to
question?
Overthrow them. And Anwil started complaining after there was some environmental damage and the gold slowed down. He started to work the slaves more and faster and harder and started complaining your slaves aren't good enough. As a matter of fact, when we don't feed them, they go off in the bush and get their own food and make better slaves. And so that's what Enki's excuse was for begetting those very superior kids that rule their kids rule the world as per the Illuminati.
Okay, so when they had the slaves in South Africa, I'm confused about whether or not these were white slaves or black slaves.
I'm catching that, Jen. Do you understand?
You're confused if they were white slaves or black slaves.
Right.
Well, one of the generations, they had the first generation of the Adam and Eve, and then the second one was Adapa and Titi, correct? Adapa?
That's right. Adapa and Titi. Let's see, the first two children that were successful, and was a boy. His name was Adamu.
Mm-hmm.
His skin was the color, the red brown of African clay. That's what it says. And Pearl, who had been carried by us by a surrogate blonde, the Princess Dantina, was a blue eyed blonde girl. That's the first girl, and she was a whopper when she got pregnant. And Engel was furious. She walked right up to her and said, "Hi, I'm Tiama. Look what I made. I'm so happy. Who are you?"
Right. So she was very intelligent and she could figure things out. But then later on, they wanted to make a second, or Enki wanted to make a second variation on it. So he physically mated with two of their descendants, and we had the Adapa and Titi, and they were even more intelligent. And so they had Cain and Abel, and so we can trace it all the way from Cain and Abel.
It's even more interesting than that. And in a lot of ways, the Cain and Abel were twins, but in the stuff I've been reading now, there's a very good argument that the first kid, Cain...
But they were like brown, light brown skinned like Arabs, right? They weren't Negroid, is that right?
The fraternal twins, and the second child was then the Dapa's child with Titi, but the first Cain, that's why Enki was so protective of Cain, because he had that kid... with
TT. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, we can hardly hear you, but go ahead, ask your question.
At what point did the Negroid race come along? Do you have any idea? And was it the black people that were working the mines, or was it white?
If you look at the research on the internet, that there's a common blue-eyed ancestor. So I think for a while they kind of got bred out, except for the line of that they were training for the kingship. There were more of them than there were the blonde-haired, blue-eyed.
Yeah.
You keep mating with, brown-eyed people. Eventually brown eyes dominate, and then blue eyes become recessive. And
right.
So now if you look at the, I'm doing the modern back, and I'm looking on YouTube, I said, and there's a couple YouTubes about, they're tracing it back to one common ancestor about 10,000 years ago, all the modern blue-eyed people, and I'm blue-eyed, and my husband's blue-eyed.
Oh.
And so maybe Enki came and did another, you know, mating with the human to create the blue eyes again into the lineage because they had disappeared for a while.
Well, I know that they were working with just a couple of races, the Anunnaki and then the hybrids, but there were also the other hominids that were there, like the Neanderthal, and there you even cited Bigfoot. So I don't know who's to say.
Lloyd Pye has shown that the Bigfoot are in the places that we don't hang out and walk through and stay in one place. And in Russia, there's this study of this woman of the Bigfoot that had children with the Russians, and their they are here. And the evidence is overwhelming. Some reason it's part of the clandestine government's don't tell the story to deny Bigfoot. They're here. Ask around. And look at the research. It's amazing. They are here. They're here.
Undoubtedly.
Doing the people, and a lot of people have Neanderthal DNA, and also Bigfoot was in, or Alma, she's called Alma, or an Alma up in Russia. She was able to reproduce with humans, and then her children had children. So that is the same species. It's just a variation of our species.
Yeah, because sometimes species and races are used interchangeably, so it can be confusing. Well, I've got another question for you then. When they were genetically designing Homo erectus, why do you suppose they used the metal copper?
It wasn't working until they used metal copper.
Why was that, do you suppose?
For evolving correctly, and Nema came up with the idea of putting it into a vessel of clay, and that came into the Bible.
Yeah.
Something happened when she mixed the admixture in the clay rather than in whatever they were using, glass.
It's obvious to me that when they say clay in these kinds of contexts, they're talking about mixtures of materials, and she's adding obviously conductivity, and she's just specifically adding elements that would affect conductivity.
Yeah.
The fluid they're using. It seems to me like a description of a pharmacology that is alluded to, but the details of which are not within our lexicon.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. You know what?
It didn't work unless she physically carried it when they put it into a native humanoid. It didn't work. So in order for it to be intelligent and be the design that they wanted, she carried it. And at first, Enki said, put it into my wife, Dankina. You know, Enki and Nima were brother and sister, and so they're really loyal to their bloodlines, right? And he wanted to put his wife at risk. And Nima said, no, this is my project, my creation, and I shall carry it. I do not want to put anybody else at risk. So she was brilliant, and she was kind and loving, and she was brave, and she carried the first human being.
But then Dankina carried the next one. That's why you get a blonde as the first girl. And the blonde has got the mitochondrial DNA of Dankina, who's the daughter of Alala the murderer.
Oh, okay. If I could interrupt you right there for a second, we're at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I'd like to get really clear on the idea of clay. Even Zachariah Sitchin seemed to be a little confused about that. So we'll discuss that when we come back in about 2 or 3 minutes.
Okay.
All right. We'll talk to you then. Supernatural Magazine, the UK's newest paranormal magazine, provides support to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. It is the magazine's goal to bring every aspect of supernatural news and research from around the world under one roof to create a universal platform for all those interested in the supernatural. More information is available at supernaturalmagazine.com. You are listening to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience on WSCA 106.1 FM, and we'll be right back after this short break. Thank you.
And welcome back to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience on WSCA 106.1 FM in Portsmouth's West End. And from the, programming on Portsmouth Radio is made possible by you, our donors, and by Living Innovations, helping Seacoast seniors and people with disabilities to lead full and happy lives at home and in the community. For more information, visit livinginnovations.com. And from the community calendar, the Stratum 76ers. The Stratum 76ers is a local social organization open to all seniors of Stratum and surrounding communities. Meetings are held the third Tuesday of each month from September to June from 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Stratum Municipal Room. A potluck lunch is provided by members, followed by information, speakers, or programs. Fun field trips are planned to the Stratum Parks and Recreation Department. Informative flyers with telephone numbers are available at the Stratum Wigan Library at 10 Bunker Hill Road. For more information, call 603-778-7600 or 603-580-1230. And, Lynn, do you have some upcoming guests?
Yeah, for our upcoming guest list, starting with January 24th, we'll have a program that's presented in dialogue as Willie and I discuss portals and how they relate to the Skinwalker phenomenon. So if any listeners out there have any questions or experiences they'd like to share with us, you're certainly welcome to call in. On January 31st, Sherry Brake, who is a paranormal investigator, author, and international tour guide, is from Ohio, and she'll be on the line to discuss life in her world of the paranormal. On February 7th, we're welcoming Rick Osman, and he's a known researcher of giants in the Ohio Valley, and we're hoping that Rick can shed some light on those giants, who they were, where they came from, and what eventually became of them. February 14th, for their third appearance, will be Tom D'Agostino and his wife, Arlene Nicholson, and they're authors of 13 books to date on local paranormal activity, and they'll be here to entertain us with their latest ghostly investigations. February 21st, with the types of symbolism popularized recently in books like The Da Vinci Code, author Robert Sullivan will join us to discuss his latest book titled Cinema Symbolism. So it's not just in France, and it's not just the Freemasons either. So that's our upcoming guest list, Willie.
Okay, all right, and now we are going to go back to the phones with our guests for tonight. We have a couple of
email
questions for our guests.
Yeah, and I don't want to forget my my question about clay, but we'll get back to that in just a minute. This is from Gordon in London, and he's asking about the gold in the atmosphere, and he says that that why would gold shield the atmosphere, and it's very highly conductive, so why were they using it? I have a feeling I know the answer to this, but I'd like either Dr. Sasha or Janet to answer that. Would you like to answer that?
When the volcanoes stopped spewing ash, which had been protecting their atmospheres, they traveled in their greatly elongated path around their primary, which is Nemesis, and Solaris, our sun. It saved their air from going away. Somehow they have all this dust in the air. And so when the volcanoes stop blowing, their scientists said, let's bomb the volcanoes. They tried that and couldn't get them to go. And they said, well, the other thing is you can suspend this. You just make gold flakes and suspend it, and it'll reflect the radiation away. The radiation was also messing up their genetics and poisoning people and everything. So they just felt desperate to get the gold. And they knew there was placer gold there. There's the instruments that told them, and there was a tradition of other space travelers who had reported this gold, and lots of it. And they wound up landing in the Persian Gulf and traced the flecks of gold down to these huge deposits in the south of Africa. And they had machines at first, and then they had a bunch of volunteers from Nibiru. And these volunteers they thought they were going to be heroes. They went for decades under the ground. They were rebelling. And actually, Enki sort of got him to rebel. So then he said, oh, look, you send these guys home. I'll make some people here that'll just do the job and, you know, and just send these people from our planet back home. Well, that was how he got to go ahead with this genetic experiment, which was adapting the genome of the Nibirans to us and making us to work for them.
Okay.
So we don't have to work for them anymore.
Getting back to that ash, I'm not sure why, probably because of the wars, but there was a lot of volcanic activity. But Nibiru has a very, very long elliptical orbit, like 3,600 years. And when it goes away from its sun, it gets really cold. So the ash was warming up the planet. But then what happened? It dissipated? The winds blew it away?
You know, we're not sure exactly if their heat system, just because their sun is, if ultraviolet, doesn't mean it doesn't have some kind of warmth. So this is a binary solar system, sun. So that may not be its purpose. They had a series of nuclear wars, generation after generation. They almost extincted themselves.
Wow.
And so there's something that happened with their repeated ongoing nuclear holocaust that lasted, you know, a long time, that made their atmosphere, you know, go all cattywampus and haywire.
It's like right now we have accumulated atomic waste from the various tests and wars, ourselves and other civilizations, and up above our ionosphere and the leaking of things like Fukushima. That's exactly what's happening to us right now.
Right, and that may be. You know, we don't know what these chemtrails are about, but one of the theories is, oh, no, it's a good thing. We're doing, you know, we're saving the atmosphere. But, of course, we're not in that loop, so most of us think it's a negative thing. I don't know. The jury's still out.
Yeah, but I do see the parallel that you're talking about. Chemtrails is very scary. What I wanted to mention was, you know, back to the clay issue. That is even mentioned in the Bible, that man was made from clay and that woman was made from one of Adam's ribs. That's sort of the second part of the question that doesn't really apply. But the clay issue, I always wondered about that.
They took some of the DNA from the rib.
From the rib, yeah. But initially...
with the detailed medical step by step, and part of it is that we actually got a piece of flesh from the rib the boy child, and we put it in the other child, the girl child.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, they actually put Denki and Nima to sleep and thought Nigashita extracted the reproductive DNA, because until that point they were mules and they were able to, you know, copulate, but they weren't able to reproduce.
They were fertile, right?
They made a decision. Nima's nurses and Nima said, you can't have my staff continually pregnant, giving birth to these, you know, these hybrids. You know, and it wasn't their purpose. So they were just, you know, these are people that were doctors. They were highly intelligent people, and they came to do their research. And so she removed them from, you know, being pregnant all their existence. And so they adapted the humans once again so they could procreate. They didn't fall from grace or anything. It's just that Enlil didn't want these beings able to procreate, because they would, in short time, outnumber them.
Yeah.
There were millions of human beings, and there were only probably about 1,000 Anunnaki.
Yeah, and also food was going to become an issue, too, if their population grew.
I called out from Mars, and they all got girlfriends among the Earthlings, and so it's still going on.
And the original Anunnaki were afraid that if they started to breed with these human beings, that they would start to devolve, and they wanted to, you know, maintain their genetic purity because they felt they were a superior race.
Yeah.
And they... you know, they live longer. I mean, they are superior in many ways because, you know, they're genetically more successful in that they live years individually.
That was the third try, wasn't it?
What's that?
That was the third try. Their final hybrid that was a success was their third try.
Oh, they made made lots more, every generation Yankee got it on with the pretty girls, and one of them, and her that was his overseer, was Lamont. And Lamont was being pressured by Anvil to make her things work harder, and so actually sent him away for his protections. And then he had Batanash, his wife, go over to Nimrod's house, and then he got over there, and it was a really juicy love scene and so forth. And their kid was Noah. And Anki, which made Noah the human king of Sherapuk, the med center complex. And, you know the rest. Noah was given the computer program for a submersible and so forth against the rules of the commander. And his line, the line of Noah, his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, are the king lines from the old times.
And if you take that to next generation or further down the line, it appears that Anki, who liked to cultivate and create children with human beings, and he was definitely not monogamous, he went on and created Jesus. Or he could have been Jesus. That's where researchers, we have a team of researchers who are trying to figure out what happened in the more modern era, which is Jesus through to, you know, today.
Mm-hmm. You know, in mentioning Moses, a very interesting thing, too, that is mentioned in the Bible is the fact that people at that time lived for hundreds of years. And I always question that. But I can see now, being a descendant of the Anunnaki, that perhaps they hadn't been, their genes hadn't been tweaked all that much.
Yeah, they lived a long time.
They did.
For several of these, over 1,000 sometimes. Shorter and shorter.
Yeah, it got shorter and shorter.
Lived over 900 years. And then Noah, for all we know, Noah is still alive.
Yeah.
But getting back to the clay issue in Sitchin's Genesis Revisited, he was talking about analyzing the etymology of the Sumerian and Akkadian terms that usually translate as clay or mud. And he said that the literal translation is that which is with life. So he said clay and mud was very a typical translation, but so would the word egg apply. So if they were mixing copper with perhaps semen and egg or flesh or blood, that would make more sense to me than just using plain old clay. Does it to you?
Oh, yes. We're not sure exactly what they're using, but you see our modern geneticists are combining, you know, they put, they make fluorescent caps, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were playing with combinations of things, and they created minotaurs and centaurs and mermaids and all, you know, Pegasus and all kinds of beings. These things, cyclops, these beings existed. They were probably here before the flood, most of them, but they have stories even later. You know, we have
1,200 years ago, 12,000 years ago or so before the flood, there were these odd animal-human hybrids.
Right.
Very bizarre.
That's what our scientists are doing. They're making
I know.
All kinds of combinations. We don't even know what they're doing in Dolby, right? We don't even have any idea, but we can only imagine.
I know. Most of it's being done in labs discreetly.
Right.
Did we ever find the gene that is connected with longevity? Because of the genome project, I thought perhaps that information might have been found.
I think there's genes to regulate the telomeres and preserving the telomeres. And I think that Audrey DeGray and others are very close on to what it is. The other thing is that the stem cells of one's own body, which can't be rejected by one's own body, can be trained to give you any organ. Blind people can get eyes from it and all kinds of, this is the technology is here to extend our life really a lot now.
Right. Dr. Aubrey de Grey and Methuselah Foundation and SEND organization, they are just hot on the trail of physical immortality. Dr. de Grey, when he came to Maui and did his presentation, said that right now, you know, within like 10 years, they have the technology to extend human lifetime to 1,000 years.
Really?
And he said by the time 1,000 years had passed, of course, we would reach what he called escape velocity. Now, he came here about 3 or 4 years ago, but I just looked on one of his YouTubes, and he has a colleague, and they're claiming that this stuff is here. But, of course, our lovely powers that be, Illuminati-based governments in the world, suppress this information. But we're looking at, you know, those at the top of the pyramid are probably, you know, they have access to this. And they probably have had it all along.
Mm-hmm.
And so they may be pretending to die and then, you know, appear again later in some other form.
Facetiously, have they found a way to make short people tall?
How to make short people tall?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm short. I hope that they do. But I actually saw some things where they're, you know, I go to these museums and people that are dwarves and they get their, you know, their bones extended and they are working with, you know, the ones we have deciphered the human genome. And so things are caught early on. If they see that the child has tested positive for dwarfism or something, they can start doing things, you know, early on. So, I don't know.
I've read that. Yeah, I studied the Genome Project.
Whatever body you happen to be wearing, that you love it and you appreciate it and thankful for it.
Janet, is there something you'd like to point out from your legacy of the gods in what is really contemporaneous right now in what's going on?
Okay, I had trouble hearing you. The Legacy of the Gods is the book that I have, the Nima perspective and part of what's going on with me and my evolution. So I have been a contactee all my life and experiencer. And so as an experiencer, and I'm working on book two of that, and I have to go back over what I wrote. I'm not sure where I left off. But I had an experience where I was underneath Johnston Atoll in the underwater installation. I was a typical type of abductee, but it was different for me because I'm a lifelong experiencer, so it's just another episode. But during that episode, I saw, and I asked them, I said, how many beings are here? And they do things in certain numbers. So they had it even 1,000 of us assembled underneath Johnston Atoll. And there was it was kind of ritualistic in that we were all dressed in clothes that could have been out of, you know, Henry VIII's court. You know, everybody was
really
out. And yeah, it was pretty phenomenal. I don't know if I've written it up anywhere. I've talked about it on other radio shows, and I probably should start at the beginning, but I'm kind of jumping to the middle of the story. And during this ritual, I was taken to a natural formation. So when we landed in the underwater base, it was, you know, man-made area. You know, in fact, it looked like it had a lot of old chairs from the 1950s or 60s. It was kind of funny. It was retro. But then we went down further into the installation, and it was a series of natural caverns. And I went to this one part, and I stood before a giant wall of obelisk, and there was a round circle of light that I stood in. And they kept asking as we were walking down to this area, it was all telepathic, if there was, no voices. It went beyond words to concept, but the concepts were, is going to happen today, is she the key, is she the one, is this it, is this going to happen? So when I stood on the light in front of the obelisk, the city wall, I keep saying the wrong word, then it dissolved, and it revealed a dragon, a very large dragon. And she was so large we couldn't see her face, so she sent a projection of herself, an avatar. So the avatar was standing face to face with me, and we were looking into each other's eyes, soul to soul, clear to each other's souls. So there was the same intelligence or the intelligence of the universe flowed through her and flowed through me. And at that point, everybody started communicating at once. Think of bees in a hive. And what was amazing was there was all this discussion going on at the same time, yet I could understand and comprehend what each and every individual was saying, and they could understand what I was saying while other people were communicating. So it was some other form of, I can't possibly do it in my human form, but in that that arena, I was in some kind of accelerated, or maybe I have some kind of accelerated genetics, I'm not sure. I certainly don't look like anything special, just kind of short. I'm not anything special in the continuum. I think all souls are equal, no matter what our genetics are. So this exchange happened. But we don't have all of the concepts. It was quite powerful and overwhelming, but it felt, all I was left with was this divine love and meaning and purpose and value. And
I'm glad it was positive.
Talking about this time, that was back in 95. It was December of 95, and that was the last couple weeks I was there in Johnson Atoll. Soon was allowed to come back to my life. The reason why they had me there, you know, they orchestrate everything. You think it's your life.
I know.
My life.
They've got a plan.
It was obvious in hindsight that they orchestrated it so I could be there. And here I am doing this work, and I'm so devoted to it.
Is Johnson Atoll in Hawaii?
Pardon?
Is Johnson Atoll in Hawaii?
It's 800 miles southwest of Hawaii. It's the most remote location.
And it's man-made, isn't it? Man-made landing strip?
They made it look like they judged it, and it looks like an aircraft carrier because they had to have a landing strip. There was, you know, I had to have a way to get there. So you can only get there, well, you get it by boat, but it's supposed to be closed now.
Mm.
But Dr. Sala said in 2009, I don't know what his source is, but Dr. Michael Sala said that right after Obama got elected, there was another meeting with extraterrestrials and humans on Johnson Atoll.
I heard that.
Okay, well, Janet, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to stop you there because we are completely out of time.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Yeah, gone by very quickly.
We're about to go overtime.
So,
we'll come back on time if you want us.
Yes, well, sure. We thank you both very much for joining us tonight on Spirit Radio.
Do you want to mention your website real quick?
Hi, this is...
We have EnkiSpeaks.com, EnkiSpeaks.com. And our other show will be archive all these shows that we do is AquarianRadio.com, AquarianRadio.com. And we'll put this episode on there, and we'll help you promote it. Just send us the link, okay?
Terrific. And they can find all the information about your books on the site, right?
Oh, we have another book coming out. It's called Anunnaki. Oh, what is it called, honey? Anunnaki. False Gods. It has a longer title, but that'll be out in about a month or two. We're working right now, finishing up the editing.
Okay, great.
All right. Okay, well,
that's the end of the show. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you both very much for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you for having us.
Okay, and you both have a good night and enjoy that nice warm Hawaii sunshine, please.
Good night.
Good night. And that is Spirit Radio, the Paranormal Experience.
And thank you everyone for listening.
In this one of many possible worlds, all for the best, or some bizarre test. It is what it is, and whatever. Time is still the infinite jest. The arrow flies when you dream. The hours tick away, the cells take away. the watchmaker keeps to his schemes. The hours tick away, they tick away. The measure